Men's Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Open line today through till 1 o'clock. Your chance to have your say. And you do that by calling 66 13 68 on the telephone. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Put your stickers in your contacts. It's easier that way. Or email studio at manxradio.com. I didn't know that Brad Pitt collected Archibald Knox stuff, apparently. Apparently, there was a comment on a Facebook page. Adrian Cowan asked if we knew that Brad Pitt was a collector of Archibald Knox. Well, apparently he is. Apparently he's a prominent collector of Archibald Knox. Maybe that was why he was here yesterday. I mean, apart from putting millions of dollars into that film, he's been described as one of Knox's most famous collectors. And, of course, they can command six-figure sums at auction, some of the pieces. Of course, that major exhibition, Knox, it's a shame, really, because he'd have loved that exhibition, Knox, Order and Beauty, at the Manx Museum. It's finished now, brought together more than 200 Knox works and highlighted the international collector base, including Brad Pitt. Wow! Didn't know that. So maybe he's been... looking around some Archibald Knox haunts. As a regular Glen Walker with my dog, I've noticed very little maintenance being done. We're talking about the Radnifolium and the state it's in some places as well. This message from Fenella, we didn't get to the whole message yesterday, but Fenella was talking about suspending the sidecars for the remainder of the TT. While I don't go to watch the TT, I've worked with a sidecar team in the past. Seeing everything that goes into running, just one outfit makes the decision to suspend the sidecars for the remainder of the TT even more significant. It undermines everything that the teams, families and supporters have invested. The work, the emotion, the wider impact of far-reaching feels like the thin end of the wedge. The island as a whole is being let down by the government departments and agencies, including over the condition of public rights of way. That was Fenella's point of view. Text to 475, we were talking about the fact that self-service tills seem to be coming prominent here, there and everywhere in mini-marts and supermarkets. My father-in-law refuses to use self-service tills because he believes it leads to people losing their jobs. He'd rather walk out of a shop than use a self-service till. And Tony said, I refuse to go into the co-op now. I used to do most of my shopping there, but since they moved to self-service tills, I've become a Tesco customer instead. At least I have the option of being served. Samantha in Port Erin dropped a note in to say regarding self-service tills, I always use them because I'm socially anxious. However, I am conscious that customers are doing a job that a member of staff would otherwise be paid to do. I think having both options available is the best solution. Maybe they should give you a discount if you use the self-service, because you are actually taking somebody else's job, aren't you? So if they gave you a discount, 10% or something, if you use this, everybody would use them then, wouldn't they? Castletown has self-service tills in the co-op as well. I refuse to use them because I believe they reduce job opportunities for unskilled workers. I also feel sorry for the sidecar teams. If the sidecars are cancelled for the Southern 100, will they lose the cost of boat travel already paid in advance? Says Barbara. Anne said, my homestay guests aren't getting much sleep. Why does the music have to be so loud every night in the Villa Marina Gardens? Is it loud? Crumbling pavements. We're talking about the condition of some of the pavements. Take a look at the pavement between Coolyrae Reserve at St John's and the roadway. What's being done about its maintenance? Nothing, it seems. Why is that? Let's find out about it. And Peter said the lack of maintenance on the Isle of Man is everywhere, and the government makes various excuses. The reality is the government is financially stretched, so they use all sorts of management speak about it. But really, it seems the money just isn't there. Why don't they just say that? got no money. Why doesn't the government, the department, get out of the office and do some strimming then, if these paths aren't very well looked after? There are many local footpaths that have been closed due to a lack of maintenance. They could dress it up as a kind of staff bonding session where they all put boiler suits on and go out with a strimmer and do that. I think they simply don't care, says Andrea. Who's the department spokesperson? Why don't they put a name to responses? And are they unwilling to be accountable? This was the response that they were talking about, the Radnor Follian, and it's very rare that there's actually a name there. Would it help if there were a name? Would it? Anonymous texter says, regarding the department's footpath statement, what is the £700,000 capital funding over 5 years actually being used for? How can there be, quote, revenue and resource shortfalls? That's the management speak we were talking about. At the same time, you either have the money or you don't. Is that just jargon to fill out a statement? If they've got £700,000, revenue and resource shortfalls. Anonymous visitor said, we are regular visitors to the Isle of Man and we've walked sections of the Radnor Follian. It's a shame it's not being kept in good order. Liz in Cumbria dropped a note. Thank you, Liz. Just to say, we're going to Anglesey shortly, and I've read that their coastal path is well maintained. The coastal scenery looks similar to the Isle of Man. The island could lose walking visitors to places like Anglesey, Cornwall and Devon. And remember, you don't have to pay the boat fares to get to those places either. Good point, Liz. Dave said, maybe the sidecar should go back to designers such as Baker and Molly, New and Ireson, and let them come up with a standard fairing for all entrants. Well, we're still waiting the outcome of that consultation regarding the sidecars, but none for 2026. As soon as we know what's happening on the Southern 100, of course, we'll let you know. Text to 696. Unfortunately, the island's gone downhill over the last decade or so. We seem to have lost much of what made it great. Now, after a couple of unfortunate sidecar crashes, they've been cancelled for this TT because of something was apparently known about before the event started. Questions need to be answered about how the situation was handled, but often it feels as though nobody is held accountable. That's 696. And on public transport, Carol, regarding the buses, I think it may have had something to do with a parade lap. This is when there was a shortage of buses. I was held up for about 15 minutes near Ramsey bus station, along with three buses in the queue towards Parliament Square traffic lights. Well, they told us it was sickness, apparently. There was a lot of sickness going around. More UK drug dealers have just been sentenced to lengthy stays in the Isle of Man prison. Once again, drug dealers have made it onto the Isle of Man and will now be housed at Manx taxpayers' expense. I don't understand why police intelligence can't prevent more of them arriving via UK ports, and why we hear so little about action being taken against drug users. It often seems and feels as though the Isle of Man is being left to deal with offenders from elsewhere. Thank you, guys. I think, I'm speaking for the police, but I mean, I think what they'd say is the offence took place here. The moment they land on Manx soil and they're caught importing drugs, the offence has taken place here, therefore they'll be charged here, the trial will be here, and they'll be imprisoned here. And how it would happen across, I mean, I don't know, do they check for drugs going onto the boat at Heysham? I mean, often you find people having their boots opened to have a look at, but it would be nice to know, wouldn't it? But that's the reason. I mean, let's face it, the Chief Constable, Russ Foster, was very plain when he took the job that they're cracking down on drug importers, people who are smuggling drugs. And when you say action being taken against drug users, which ones? Who? And what would you say? Is it a fine for somebody who's using a bit of weed? Or somebody who's snorting cocaine on a Saturday night? How would you do that? I mean, these are people who are using drugs, who are putting themselves at the end of that criminal chain. They're buying them from criminals who buy them from criminals who buy them from criminals. It's a pyramid scheme. It's like Amway or Tupperware. but quite how you sanction drug users, particularly as, you know, one of the MHKs was talking about loosening the law on cannabis use, recreational cannabis. And more questions than answers. Bearing in mind the bad weather and the disruptions to the TT schedule, how about cancelling the Red Arrows display and fireworks and donating the money instead to support injured riders, says 144. And population and employment, a note in from Mark who said, we're in a demographic decline. It's not a case of workers losing jobs. We just don't have enough workers on the Isle of Man. Well, that's the circle that we find ourselves in, isn't it? And remember, the government stated aim to get the population up and to get more people working on the Isle of Man. Remember, the only way we get money is by people paying tax and national insurance and VAT. People will only buy stuff and pay VAT if they have money in their pockets. That's the way that we get money. So we have to get more people working and paying tax and national insurance. Local residents seem very accepting of loud music late into the evening at the grandstand, especially on Sunday night. It was louder than the normal volume of our television in Onchan. How loud's your TV then? I'd just driven over the slough towards Port Erin. It was thick fog, yet there were a couple of walkers and some cyclists without lights. They were practically invisible. So please, please, please drive to the condition, walk to the conditions. And if you are a walker, get one of those trendy high-vis vests on. My wife Sue, this is Roy B, said Andy, my wife Sue will not use self-service tills unless she gets staff discounts and an invitation to the staff Christmas party. Well, it's a point, isn't it? If you're going to do the job of somebody who works there, you should either get the staff discount or an invitation to the staff Christmas party. Do you think? Thank you, Roy. I would have thought that in this day and age, says Brian, with concerns about liability and compensation claims, trip hazards and uneven pavements would be repaired as soon as possible. However, nobody seems too bothered anymore. Well, the difference is, Brian, on the Isle of Man, there's no such thing as no win, no fee. So you don't get ambulance chasing advocates. It doesn't work over here. So unless you're prepared to take the authorities to court or to sue them, then there's not really much you can do. Just a little moan, says Anna. The rider who did a burnout and got told off, but did the police forget that a few years ago bikers were doing donuts on the promenade and Mad Sunday was all about riding round the course? Feels as though the Isle of Man has got a bit stale. A biker was also told not to use his loudspeaker system from the UK, and that seems a shame. Bushes isn't the same anymore, says an anonymous texter. Everything feels predictable, but none of the burnouts or excitement that many people felt helped make the TT special. Feels a bit sterile now and a bit more like a commercial operation than it used to be. I'm a visitor, but I won't be back because is it feeling a bit sterile? You know, I just wonder what you think. What do you think about this? Now, did you hear this story about Andrus Airfield and what they're planning to do at Andrus Airfield? And bearing in mind, we're looking at kind of net zero renewables and this, that and the other. This company called IPV FlexGen is working on plans for a solar panel and an anaerobic digester at Andrus Airfield. And the managing director of IPF FlexGen says that power generated on the site could support the Isle of Man's grid if there was an outage. Did that used to be called a power cut? Outage is American, isn't it? Anyway, the MD of IPV FlexGen, he said, if given approval, it's claimed the development would be able to generate up to 27 megawatts of electricity at peak power. The project will be primarily used to supply properties at Andrus Airfield, but Ed Jessamine, MD of IPV FlexGen, says talks have been held about providing power to Manx utilities.
We've spent 5 years talking with MUA about how do we develop a complementary system, because we want the power for use on site, but obviously we would also like to be able to bring whatever incoming power we can. We're sort of describing the grid almost as an umbilical cord, but we've got an islanded solution, and for that we need to have the AD, which gives us baseload power. So we're guaranteed all year round we're producing our 2 megawatts, which we'd hope to do from that. And we supplement that with solar power. The airfield's got pretty good irradiation, so sunshine hours. And by putting PV in, which is the cheapest form of renewable energy, we got a blend of energy cost, which allows us to develop a crop first AD project.
And PV, for those uninitiated, photovoltaics?
Photovoltaics, yeah. So we're designing systems, ground-mounted solutions. So we're looking to effectively work in what we describe as agrivoltaics. So it's the optimization of land for both agriculture and energy production. Robert's mentioned in this particular project, we're looking at sheep grazing around the site, which is very common practice. And, you know, the sheep really enjoy the protection they get from the elements working around the PV. And that helps us because it keeps the grass down. So we've been working with Robert to develop a system that gives him a base load. Our initial target is to sort of get to around about 3 megawatts of available power. And we're doing that through the AD, through the PV, and through battery storage. And we're doing it in a way that allows us to bring power in from the grid so that we can potentially expand our power demand if we need to, while we're potentially upgrading our renewables as well. So it's a complementary system to the network.
IPV FlexGen, they're called, and that's the managing director. If you want to hear more about this, there's a public consultation meeting taking place a week tonight at Antrose Parish Hall. Well, it's actually on all day long, 7 to 10 till 7. If you want to pop along and see, the Manx Utilities has been invited to comment on this. And also, there's a next Monday's agenda. Phil Gorm will be talking to IPV FlexGen all about it. And what's going to happen? So the public meeting is a week today, 10 a.m. till 7 p.m. at Andrus Village Parish Hall. Anybody at all talking about the economy and the economic impact of the bad weather at the motorcycle races? Many businesses are being hit due to visitors clearing off early because of the rain. Is this true? That's 223. I just wonder whether you've heard anything about that. We've also had a comment about this guy who's representing two places, Douglas City Council and Ramsey Commissioners. His name is Arwood Hall. Cabinet Office have been contacted and they say there's no restriction on people wanting to be a member of multiple local authorities. They didn't say how many you can do, but Arwood Hall is representing Douglas and join Ramsey Commissioners in an uncontested by-election at the end of May. So is that Mr. Hall's now going to be representing residents of Douglas at Ramsey's South Ward and working for ratepayers in Douglas's Central Ward? The department, that's the Cabinet Office, says candidates can't stand in multiple wards of the same local authority, but you can represent different local authorities. I think that's a first. So, Mr. Hall, Councillor Hall has been contacted for comment, but as yet we don't know about this. I just wonder what you think. It says something, though, doesn't it? That we obviously don't have enough candidates. Two people, Eric Corkish, got in, and Arwood Hall in Ramsey. And there's going to be another by-election in Ramsey shortly because they lost four commissioners. Unless you get more candidates, people are just going to walk in. And democracy is like a recipe. Everybody has to chip in. This also leads on to what's going to happen in the general election this year. It's common to moan about the government. It's common to blame the government. The government should do this and the government should do that. And what are they doing, this, that, and the other? But if nobody stands, and, you know, I just counsel you, if you think the government is doing a bad job, how about having a pop yourself? How about you standing for Keys this coming September? Or is that just a bit too much effort? Just saying. Here's Julian now. You're not standing, are you, Julian?
Interesting question. That I've been asked that so many times recently. I'll keep everyone in thrall.
Okay.
See what happens. solar on the island, I know there's this proposal to put 10 megawatts of solar panels on Solby Reservoir. So that's 40 acres of solar panels, which is going to be a quarter of the surface area of Solby Reservoir, which is one of the primary drinking water supplies for the island, is it not?
Yeah.
I notice they talk about the fact that the perfluorinated polymers, or PFAS, they say that there will be insignificant amounts of that that could potentially be toxic, although I understand that the back sheets and the protective coatings are in that. But they don't seem to be talking much about the stuff that's actually made in the panels, like the modules and things, which have things like toxic cadmium telluride, lead, selenium and chromium. And I seem to remember, was it January last year that Storm Eowyn pretty much flattened the forest across the way on the Druidale side of Solby Reservoir? The measured wind speed on Snae Fell was 107 miles an hour, but I would say that the valley, you know, it's like a wind tunnel effect, was significantly more than that. If we had something with a similar kind of storm with a bunch of floating solar panels on our drinking water that is 40 acres of things with things like cadmium telluride in them,
yeah.
What's that going to do to the drinking water if anything goes wrong? I mean, it's all very well when it's in normal operating mode, but what if a load of them are flipped in and end up on the bottom of Solby Reservoir?
Well, you would assume that if we were going to have floating solar panels, that they do risk assessment, and there'd obviously be contingency plans if there were any maintenance that needed to happen, or the things got broken, or, you know, you had a particularly vicious seagull that went down and gave one a headbutt. I'm partially joking, but I mean, you would think that they'd know what was going to happen if anything went wrong with these solar panels.
Well, seagulls are known to drop things to break shells open, aren't they? So, you
True.
Know, you're not completely wrong there. And talking of solar on the island, you've got another problem. And I suppose I could call it the inertia paradox. Because, you know, we talked yesterday about, you know, you've got a tug-of-war rope and you've got demand on the one side of people pulling, and then you've got the generation on the other side. And it has to be the flag in the middle can hardly move, because otherwise all our machinery and, you know, anybody that is still making stuff, you know, in industry or our lights and our computers won't work if it goes outside of a very tight movement. But solar and wind don't have any of this inertia which the Pullrose power station, not only the gas but the diesels, generate with these big rotors that push the electricity through all the time in a nice smooth sine wave. It's just a lovely 50 times a second. So if we start to be more and more reliant on renewables that don't have any inertia, we've got to put inertia into the system somehow or other. So what's going to happen? If we become dependent on an interconnector, well, we've got to pay for that electricity, haven't we, to bring that inertia over. And if we have to do that, then are we not going to have to curtail the renewables? Especially if the power station can only go so low, because you can't go any lower because it starts using up far more gas. It's a bit like if you drove around at 10 miles an hour, you are not going to get the same miles per gallon as you are at 50 or 60.
Right.
The same thing applies to the power station. So you've got this conundrum that we absolutely have to have this smoothness of the electricity, but you've got a solar panel that every time the clouds go over, or with the wind, every time there's a gust or it lacks, you're going to end up with the inertia all over the place. It has to be very precise. So we've got a paradox going on here.
Well, presumably, again, what I'm hoping is that everybody who's involved in wind farms, onshore or offshore, they know all this stuff anyway, and the solar panel people, they will know it. So presumably they'll have checks and balances in the chain of the circuit, so they'll know exactly what to do. Well, you would hope so. It's just that they never actually tell us in detail how it would happen.
Well, it's interesting. On the Manx Utilities website, WSP, which is a consultancy, in 2023 did a paper, and it specifically highlighted this problem on page 18 to do with stability issues with the grid. And even that paper was suggesting you can't rely just on an interconnector and renewables. You're going to have to spend a lot of money on some sort of carbon neutral spinning huge rotors to keep this inertia going. And actually, from what I can see, my estimation of a £40 million battery system actually looks nearer to £90 million when you start looking into this, because you have to insert this proper, robust inertia into the system. So if we do have that wind farm, even if they stay at their £45 million, it's looking increasingly like, if, once you start putting all the gubbins in to deal with all this inertia issue, we're looking at £150 million at least, because you're going to have a shed load of hidden costs on top of all this. But the alternative would be to spend just £50 million, refurbish the power station and have all of the inertia for free, and you haven't got to do all of this other battery and inertia stuff and interconnectors and all the other rubbish that's going to cost an absolute fortune.
And you would have thought that while we're talking about multiple millions, somebody somewhere would just say, well, why don't we put, you know, £3 or £4 million to one side and do a test borehole for geothermal just to see forever if it works or doesn't work. And really, £3 or £4 million for a test borehole for geothermal, and get the people over who actually do it, to do it for a living, to do it, and then we'll know once and for all. Because in the grand scheme of things, that surely isn't a lot of money.
Absolutely. I mean, I was in the Azores, and they said it was actually cheaper than that to do, say, a 3.5 kilometre borehole with the Icelandic drilling company that they contracted directly. So they didn't waste, you know, £3.7 million on a consultancy first, like we've done with Eerie Stain so far with Wardell Armstrong.
When you say they got the Iceland, they got Icelandic people to the Azores.
Correct. They sailed the whole thing down, and they, I think at the moment, Ponta Delgada is the capital, but São Miguel, the island, the main island, they're coming up on 75% completely off the grid with geothermal. And of course, geothermal will drive a steam generator that gives you all this inertia. So it's it's the perfect system. And to be honest, I totally agree with you. I think there should be a push to see if geothermal is possible. What? All we're getting is one geologist saying this. Germany, they ignored the geologist that was trying to poo-poo it, and they ended up with about 40% hotter and more power than they thought they would in northern Germany with their geothermal system. So, you know, there's everything to gain from it. And it would displace an awful lot of the gas that we use now.
Well, I mean, the thing is that however much it costs, and while, you know, they're bandying tens of millions around for renewables and this, that and the other, at least if they put a few million pounds to one side to do and get the Icelandics down and bring their rigs and what have you and do that, because they know what they're doing, get them. And the Icelandics would be either to, you know, they'd say either yes or no. They'd say yes or no. And then if it's yes, then fine, we've won. And if it's no, at least it'll shut people up who talk about geothermal. But at the moment, while ever we're talking about all sorts of renewables, geothermal gets pushed to one side as though it's a non-starter.
Yeah. And, you know, they say, oh, it's very expensive to put in. I think the lack of generation that this wind farm at Eerie Stain, because, you know, the idea that it's going to generate three times more than almost anywhere else, including Scotland or Nova Scotia, is ridiculous. But the main point of all this is, I think all the hidden costs are going to be so enormous, it's going to make the Liverpool Ferry Terminal look like a minor hole in your pocket.
Okay,
you're probably talking £400 million. Anyway, thanks very much, Andy.
Good to hear from you. 26 minutes before one. The story about geothermal, I got a message in from Walter. Hello, Walter. First time message. You just said, maybe the problem with geothermal is that big companies don't make millions and millions and billions out of it, because once a geothermal system is put in there, there's very little maintenance And there aren't big companies doing this purely because you can't charge millions and billions for operating it, because it's very simple. It's a very simple principle and it works 24 hours a day. Is that the reason that the big companies aren't involved in geothermal? Because there's no money in it long term. But it seems to be something that if it did work for the Isle of Man, that'd be, we'd be quids in if it works. And if it doesn't work, well, it will be nice to know once. Thank you, Walter. The co-op says it's got no money to employ more staff. In my view, this has nothing to do with the shortage of workers, says Jam. There should be no government funding for the scheme at Andrews Airfield, says Marie. Are they asking for government money, by the way? If a person can represent two local authorities, then do we only need the number of half the number of MHKs? Well, you're comparing apples and oranges there. Mr. Hall is a local authority member, not an MHK. Texter 667. And Brian said, talk about the Isle of Man going stale. It's hard to believe that not that long ago, there was a policeman lying in the road while Steve Colley jumped over him on his trials bike. Yes, it's all gone a bit stale, a bit sterile. I saw, Texter 157, I saw Douglas Corporation workers strimming grass at Annika roundabout this morning in the pouring rain. Meanwhile, the grass and hedges around Noble's Hospital car park haven't been cut for weeks, if not longer. 157 says the Isle of Man is starting to look neglected in many places, with maintenance needed wherever you look. You're on Man in Line.
Do you know, Dave, the Q-Plus counter always has just what I need. Whatever plumbing job I'm working on, whether a state-of-the-art bathroom or the latest heating system, Q-Plus always help. With extensive supplies, friendly, knowledgeable service and great prices, it really is the one-stop shop for trade and DIY customers alike. And if they don't have what you want in stock, they'll find it for you. See for yourself. Just take a look at Q-Plus on Facebook.
TE Cubbon provide new memorial stones, grave renovations, new inscriptions and fire hearths. Visit us at Hope Street, Castletown or at Broadway Douglas or call 844-440. TE Cubbon, here when you need us.
Cork Hill Storage. Call Cork Hill Removals and Storage today. We'll store your goods day after day. Safe and secure around the clock. When it comes to storage, we do the lot. Click CorkHillRemovals.com.
Wellness doesn't have to be complicated. Sometimes it's as simple as wild swimming in crystal waters, walking cliff paths with sweeping views, or cycling quiet island lanes. On the islands of Guernsey, you can do it all. Across five islands that you can hop between with ease: Guernsey, Herm, Sark, Alderney, Liu. Each one is different, but all of them are a breath of fresh air. Reconnect with nature. Reconnect with yourself. Start your wellness journey at visitguernsey.com.
The countdown to the 2026 general election is officially on. On Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll get to have your say on who should represent you in the House of Keys for the next 5 years. But what are the things you really want to know from your candidates? How they feel about wind farms, what they do to improve healthcare, or how they plan to tackle government efficiency? Whatever it is, if you have a burning question for those standing, we want to hear from you. You can find out how and everything else you need to know about the upcoming election on our dedicated election website. Just head to manxradio.com.
W-I-N-T.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
We're getting, decided to get some new lures or traps to see if there was a hornet. We would find them in these particular specially made traps for the...
Harry Owens, that is, who's a beekeeper on the Isle of Man. I got a message in from Cathy who just said, will you stop telling us you're going to tell us something and then not doing it? You said you were going to tell us all about bees on the Isle of Man and how things were in a bad way. So we'll hear from Harry fairly shortly, but David's on now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. Harry's great. He's the only guy years ago when I used to work for Douglas Corporation. Then when we had bees or honeybees, were they honeybees? I can't remember. He'll tell us anyway when you ask him about it. He actually collected the whole nest. He brought the hive there and took them, and they weren't destroyed. And that's what we call saving nature. Yeah. But I wanted to think regarding the development at Andreas there. I just wonder whether the local authorities are in favour of this. Because I'm an Onkin lad, and I'd love to go So I know it's a public meeting, so I don't know whether it's a public meeting just for ratepayers.
No, it's a public meeting for everybody. I think you just pitch up there, 10 o'clock next Wednesday morning.
Right. Well, that's down for me there. Alexa's trying to talk to me. And I just want to say again, I know I hammer it all the time now, we need the direct answers, don't we? We need the definite answers from the chairman of the Manx Utilities on your radio station, or the chief executive, and see what the MUA plans are. And I know they're tentatively supporting the thing at Andreas, which I think will be a good thing. Is are they definitely going to go out of their way to help them out? And that's because of the links. That's the biggest thing,
yeah.
Is where the big network is. I don't know where the network is up at Andreas there. But if you connect into the system, you know, you're away, aren't you?
Well, it's another option for us. And at the moment, it's not like it can affect the neighbours, because Andreas Airfield hasn't got many neighbours.
No, but there'll be some. And that's, I just wonder what the community feels up there. And this is a good way of doing it, isn't it? Better than being in an election. It's just ask the community through Manx Radio. What do they think? You know, do they? And I think I know the Robert fella from years ago when I was in small time in Defa.
Yeah.
So I'll look forward to being there.
Well, Robert Murray's father, Lionel, was an MHK at one time, very big into breeding pigs in the north. There's political history in there, and Robert's been a farmer for years and years there.
Yeah. So what he is, he's diversifying, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what we encourage Manx people to do, and people are coming to live on the Isle of Man. That's why I have millionaires here, don't we?
Well, and you can tell me, by the way, when we're talking about people putting themselves forward for elections, whether it's local elections or whether it's national elections, and the fact that, you know, people simply have to take part in democracy. You've got to do it, because if you don't take part in it, there's no point.
By the way,
there's no point belly aching afterwards if you don't take part in it.
Yeah, and that's why we have the Manx Line too, don't we? Is to encourage people out there that want to stand. You may not get it the first time. I mean, I stood for the local authority about two or three times before I got in. And then you meet the community, you get involved. I married an Onkin girl, and we got a house, first-time buyer. And McCard's built them, and I'll never forget the government at the time lent us money. And that's the way it happens, doesn't it, Andy? Mm.
So, listen, first time that you didn't get in, how did you feel?
Oh, gutted, really. That's the biggest thing, you know, when you stand for the local authority or the national election, always be prepared to say, you know, you had your chance, you had your go, and for those that people didn't vote for you, like I've always said as well, it's the ones that don't vote for you, you need to maybe give us a ring sometime. And there are a lot of people out there who don't contact MHKs or whatever, and they should do, and they should get answers. But I don't believe the politicians at the minute do give answers out. Mm. And that's the biggest thing. They need to communicate with the local population or the national population there too. And I'm still heaving and reeving about when they split Onkin in half and put half to Garth.
Yeah.
So Lakeside out at Majestic and all the way that way at the Whitebridge Way are all in Garth, and they live in Onkin. When it's the local authority elections.
Okay.
Come on.
All right. Good to hear from you. Thank you.
Bye.
17 minutes before one. Yes, it's next Wednesday then. Next Wednesday, the 10th of June, there's public consultation between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. So it's all day, 9 hours worth of it, at Andreas Parish Hall, about this privately funded development at Andreas Airfield with this company, IPV FlexGen. And it's all about a renewable energy thing, this anaerobic digester. Basically, they're generating energy from crops. And this would work well for the agricultural industry on the Isle of Man, because a lot of farmers will be paid, basically. They get the crop. They would be growing crops. They wouldn't be for food. They'd be to generate energy from crops. So it's a virtuous circle. It gives the farmers something to do and also generate energy and generate. And this, the those behind the project say it's going to generate 27 megawatts at peak production, 10 jobs in it, and any residual heat from the project, of which there will be some, will be used off-site to heat up to 300 homes. They basically pipe the hot water away. Hopes to begin construction next spring 2027, with a view to having the anaerobic digester online for 2028. Find out all about it next Wednesday at Andreas Parish Hall between 10 and 7, and you can hear a whole programme on it next Monday, Agenda with Phil Gorn, from 6.30 till 7 with Phil Gorn. How is the Isle of Man better than everywhere else? I'll tell you one way the Isle of Man's better than everywhere else. Our air quality is 40% better than the UK. The government's published its air quality monitoring report for 2026. And it was a two-year island-wide study and confirmed that pollution levels are significantly lower than UK's. The Isle of Man's reputation for clean and healthy air is intact. DEFA monitored nitrogen dioxide and sulfur dioxide levels at 63 locations, mainly around schools, between October 2023 and October 2025. It was a part of the Island Plan environmental commitment. You may have heard Claire Barber was talking about this, and Tim Cowser were talking about this when they were on a couple of weeks ago. It shows that nitrogen dioxide levels average just 13 micrograms per cubic metre, compared to the UK average of 21 micrograms per cubic metre and the UK action level of 40. Sulfur dioxide levels average 1 microgram per cubic metre, well below the UK threshold of 20. Our air is much better than theirs. So, Harry Owens, the beekeeper, hopes this year's spring will give the island's honey producers a chance to catch up after a pretty grim 2025. Kathy, this is all about the bees. Harry Owens says challenging conditions last year meant the bees were left with very little pollen to collect.
We're getting, decided to get some new lures or traps to see if there was a hornet. We would find them in these particular specially made traps for the job. But they haven't really got to any extent up through England yet. That's one good thing. I mean, they found an odd one in Ireland, Southern Ireland and what have you, but that could be one that's got on something and been transported over, and just an ordinary hornet, not a queen. One of the dangers is the queens, they're the ones that, if they come over, then
they set
procreate.
Up colonies, presumably. It's out of hives. They set up. They start proliferating.
Right. Yeah. Just like a wasp, they'll create a colony, and then as at the end of their breeding time, they'll produce queens, and they can produce over 100 queens or more than that within a hive. And those queens will eventually hibernate when the weather gets really bad. Out of that, you can get about 5%, but if you think about 5% of 100, they then go out and do the same thing the following year, and so it gets worse and worse and worse.
We've got a meeting here of the bee keepers,
yes.
Various keepers,
yep.
Down here. Just tell us, how has the bee harvest gone in this last year, in the last 12 months?
Well, last year and the year before was pretty grim. We had some lousy summers. It didn't work in with the plants that were secreting and the bees that could go out and get to it. So basically, last year, the summer was so bad that the fruit on the brambles was there, and the bees then got the fine weather, and there was nothing for them to collect. So it was a bit of a disaster. The honey crop was pretty grim. But this year, the spring is giving us a bit of boost. Let's hope it'll continue and we'll be able to catch up.
Harry Owens there talking about conditions, and the hornets he's referring to, we flagged this many times on Man in Line, it's the yellow-legged Asian hornet, which we're watching for. There has been one, but we need to keep our eyes peeled for the yellow-legged Asian hornet. Juan's on now. Hi, Juan.
How are you, Andy? It's a miserable day out there. It's trying to clear up. I think in the south it's a bit sunnier, but it's not going to help the racing, I don't think.
Well, no, not certainly not today.
No, absolutely. Interesting today. I mean, there's been two calls. So many people phone up, criticising people that phone the show up. But you get a day like this, where are they all? Why aren't they picking the phone up to you, Andy, and saying their piece? I find it interesting. People are quick to criticise, but you've got a quiet programme and no one's on it. The you're talking there about geothermal, and we've spoke about this so many times on this program, and I agree, and I've said before, like Walter said, I think it is purely that people are not going to make money out of it. And that's why they're not touching it. I scratch my head with this government and civil servants that they will not explore this, because it could just simply turn the Isle of Man around and be within all the realms of net zero and sustainability and everything else that they're pushing for at the moment, just by simply exploring that avenue and doing that. We could be a leader in farming. We could have massive polytunnels. We could be a leader in so much farming and export. It could just turn this island round. I just do not see the logical reason in going down this avenue, except the fact that this government are told not to, or that there's no outside influence there. There's no money to be made for any other big company. I just scratch my head. We've spoke about this how many times on this program, Andy?
Well,
I don't
many
know.
Times. I mean, Graham Foxhume was the guy who first brought it up. Graham came on the show 2-3 years ago and talked about it. And it's a proven technology. It works elsewhere. All we need to do is to find out. And he's convinced that it would work on the Isle of Man. Now, there are several naysayers who work for other companies and what have you. But the fact is that, we're bandying around. I mean, you know, the fact that the Liverpool landing stage has gone tens of millions of pounds over budget. You know, the promenade went over budget. Even going back years ago, you know, the hospital went over budget. Surely a few million quid to one side just to say once and for all that geothermal does work or doesn't work on the Isle of Man. And in the grand scheme of things, what could we possibly lose apart from a few million quid? And we're losing that anyway.
Absolutely, absolutely and totally. And most of the naysayers have got a dog in the race. There's always a dog in the race with these people that are very strong opinions.
I don't mind that, Ewan, as long as they say it. I don't mind it. If somebody's in business and they work for either a wind company or a solar company or any other company, whether, even if it's a fossil fuel company, fine. That's fine. But just tell us the fact that it would affect your living. That's the reason you're against it.
No, exactly my point, but they don't. And when you explore the avenue, they've got a dog in the race, and they don't admit that they've got a dog in the race. I spoke to someone who comes over here regularly, actually, who works for a big company here from Martinique, and they said that the best thing that they did out there was to go to geothermal and never look back. So I'm bemused at this government and its civil servants for not exploring this. I don't know whether it's because we've got weak politicians who won't step out of their comfort zone and do it, or whether we've got dominant civil servants who are controlling it. But there's definitely something there that's blocking this, and it would be such a simple answer. You know, I mean, we're talking about this Andreas stuff now. I mean, we've got 6% self-sufficiency in food at the moment, and they're wanting to grow electricity, basically. So, the geothermal would solve all these problems of everything that they're talking about. Yeah. And we would be a shining light of everywhere, because we would have our own power, totally.
And that's the point. The point that you raise about the 6% self-sufficiency is, and at the moment, everything's fine. We own the boats and everybody's got lots of food. But if things turned the other way and suddenly we were at the end of a supply chain and people didn't want to supply us because they wanted it, where would we be? What would we live on? You know, we don't grow that many spuds. Yeah. Before, we could all eat spuds and herring. But we can't now.
Yeah. No. And the way farming's going in England, there's not a will from government to support farming at the moment. And, God, if we haven't got food to eat and we haven't got water to drink, we've got a problem.
Well, do you remember, I mean, I don't think you were here, but during COVID, I mean, everybody went doolally buying all the bottled water and the pasta and the toilet roll during COVID. Imagine if we had a run on potatoes suddenly, and suddenly people couldn't get potatoes. We'd be, and it seems like sometimes, you know, we talk about this very blithely that we're only 6% sufficient. That's not very good in the long term. It's not good for us as a society if we only grow 6% of the food that we eat.
there's there's massive warning signs around at the moment in the world of change that's coming through, and you get the big boys there who are into, you know, doing this false foods and everything. Again, there's so many health issues with that. And like I said, if we pull the drawbridge up just a little bit and stop trying to be like the Joneses and just looked after ourselves, we could actually be so self-sufficient here and sell to a big market that's going to be struggling in a few years' time. You know, maybe in the next 10 years' time with all this 2030 agenda that they're trying to creep in, Andy. But I think the government should get a little bit of a backbone and stand up and just spend that couple of million, because we might not look back after that.
Okay.
All this wind turbine thing might just go by the wayside because we've got what we need.
Okay, thank you, Jordan. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Andy.
Five to one.
Bye.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
Do you ever feel that the news sounds, well, a little familiar? Chances are, it's because you've heard it all before. Using windmills to produce power? We were trialling those in the early 1960s. Old news. Reform of the Legislative Council? They were talking about that in the 1950s and earlier. Old news. Problems at Peel Commissioners? The Examiner suggested there was another farce there in 1945. Old news. Listen to these stories and more in the Old News Podcast with me, H, available via your usual podcast provider or direct from the Manx Radio website. And you can also hear each new podcast broadcast live every Sunday morning, just after 8:30. There's nothing new under the sun, it seems. It's all old news.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
As a Manxman, born and bred, who's lived here all my life, says Ian, and I'm now in my 60s, I'm concerned the Isle of Man is going downhill. It seems to have lost some of its sparkle. During this year's TT, it appears to me there are fewer visitors around. Government spending continues to increase, yet the services people receive seem to be reducing. I have to ask, what is next for the Isle of Man? Where do we go from here? Well, September's going to be a pointer to it. On the 13th of August, the House of Keys will be dissolved. On the 26th of August, candidate nomination period ends. And the big day, Thursday, 24th of September, the polling booths are going to be open 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. And then the chips will fall. We'll know who the next 24 MHKs are who will make up the House of Keys. A chief minister will be gathered around, and that'll be it. And who knows, it could be you standing for the House of Keys. Have I made my point in a photo? Thank you, Simon. He says, stop going on about becoming an MHK. I don't want to. All right, Simon. Thanks to Chris on the phones. Enjoy your Wednesday.
WINT.